You are listening to The Vitals, a bi-monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out Oncology Nursing News online or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. For this episode of The Vitals, we spoke with Dr. Daniel J. Verena, a nurse practitioner with the myeloma team at Mount Sinai Medical Center. Dr. Verena recently presented on adverse event management for novel multiple myeloma therapies as part of the International Myeloma Society's 6th Annual Nursing Symposium. In this episode of The Vitals, Dr. Verena sits down with us to discuss clinical pearls and caring for patients who are receiving the multiple myeloma therapy, selinexor. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
My name is Dr. Daniel Verena. I'm a nurse practitioner at Mount Sinai Medical Center. I am pleased and humbled to be part of the multiple myeloma service of the Department of Excellence in New York City. And I've been practicing in myeloma for the last 12 years, but in hematology for the last 18 years.
Great. Wonderful. Just to start off with a bit of a patient case, could you talk about Mr. A? What was his diagnosis? How old was he? Did he have any comorbidities?
So Mr. A is a 64-year-old male. He's African-American and who was diagnosed with kappa-free light chain multiple myeloma in 2019. So he was approximately 61, 62 at diagnosis. And he had no other really significant comorbidities, a healthy, active male. He presented actually to his local ED with feeling of fatigue and tiredness and found to have hypercalcemia. His calcium actually was 14. And he had an acute kidney injury. So the average kidney should be like up to 1. His kidney function was almost 2 grams. They did a diagnostic bone marrow biopsy at that time, and they found him to have 90% kappa restricted plasma cells in his bone marrow. And his FISH showed him to have a 1Q gain, which is a poor prognostic diagnostic factor in FISH. But interesting enough, he had a standard risk of a translocation 11-14.
Interesting. And with all this information, what treatment plan did the team choose? And could you explain why?
Absolutely. So in myeloma, I would say right now, we're at the rebirth of really new treatments. That's my new statement now, the rebirth, the renaissance period of myeloma. What I'm saying is that patients do get standard of care treatment. So they'll get treated with a proteasome inhibitor such as bortezomib. They'll get some type of immunomodulator medication like lenalidomide and, of course, some dexamethasone. And he was actually treated up front with lenalidomide, bortezomib, and dexamethasone. And usually every cycle for us is about 28-day cycle. So he was treated for 2 cycles and had a standard response. So really no change in his disease. So we decided to deepen his response by adding an anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody such as daratumumab, and then the second generation proteasome inhibitor with carfilzomib in conjunction with lenalidomide and dexamethasone. And he got that for 2 cycles. But unfortunately, the world went into a pandemic. So we had to switch all therapy to exazimib, which is an oral-based proteasome inhibitor with lenalidomide and dexamethasone. And then unfortunately, he was treated for a long period of time, but then actually became hypercalcemic again and progressed and had to be admitted for what we call salvage chemotherapy or DCEP to help bring down his disease burden. And then we collected his stem cells, because all part of myeloma treatments, we try to get, and he's very young, we try to get the stem cells so that we can use them for a transplant, whether we use the transplant up front or if we use it actually at first relapse, but we had to get his transplant itself done. He was actually transplanted. So when I look at his total treatments, that to kind of wrap it up and really look at what he's seen, he's actually had 2 subsequent transplants to keep his disease into control. He's actually had another salvage chemotherapy called VD-PACE. He's also seen Dara plus carfilzomib and venetoclax. And venetoclax has been shown in the Bellini trial to benefit patients who have a translocation 11-14, which he had from his initial bone marrow biopsy. He then had a standard of care CAR T cell. He did have Ide-cel or Abecma, and he had about 10 months of progression-free survival, but unfortunately he did relapse, and his relapse is quite different. He relapsed with a lot of extramedullary disease in the abdomen and in the lower back. He doesn't truly produce a lot of serological markers, so his kappa light chains may look slightly elevated or normal, but when we do radiological testing, such as MRIs or PET scans, we do see a lot of extramedullary disease. He's gotten radiation to those particular areas. We started him on isatuximab, which is another generation of an anti-CD38 monoclonal antibody. Then he got pomalidomide plus dex. Unfortunately, he progressed. So we had to make a decision on what the next best therapy is. And that therapy was actually putting him back on bortezomib, but adding a new mechanism of action called selinexor. In myeloma, just to talk off topic in a way, in myeloma, it's not one drug, but it's multi mechanisms of actions that we try to use in combination to be able to combat a lot of the subclones that we see in myeloma. So it becomes a challenge. And by changing the mechanization, our thought process is that we can probably debulk or combat the resistance or refractoriness that he's seen in multiple other the standard of care therapies.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. And to talk about selinexor, which is the ultimate treatment the patient is on now, could you just speak to this drug in general? What is it approved for? Where is it approved? What's the mechanism of action like? And what did you explain to Mr. A when you told him that this treatment was what he was going to try next?
Selinexor brings in a new mechanism of action. Selinexor is a nuclear export inhibitor. What it really does is there is a cargo protein that moves tumor suppressor genes that are in our nucleus. So tumor suppressor genes help stop cells from multiplying, if we talk about those. And there's a multitude of different ones that are available, but most popular ones that most of us probably are very accustomed to would be the P53 that most of us know, or the BRCA gene, which we've heard. And these genes are moved in and out from the nucleus into the cytoplasm. But in myeloma, our cells make more of these export proteins. So the suppressor genes are then removed from the nucleus and then put into the cytoplasm, initiating and allowing our cells to grow faster. And especially in myeloma, we're really looking at patients that have fast division or high mitotic rates of cell or explosion of their disease. So selinexor added a new mechanism by blocking this cargo protein from removing the suppressor genes out of the nucleus. So really inducing our patients to have a pro-apoptosis effect on the patients itself. So that's really what we're looking for. It also reduces several oncoproteins such as the c-MYC or the cyclin D1, and really causing cell arrest or really cell death is what we did. Its original indication, just to kind of go backwards a little bit for us, its original indication was a single agent for patients who had four lines or more therapy. So they had to be penta-refractory to many of the standard of care. So they had to have seen a CD38, two immunomodulators, two of the proteasome inhibitors to get on the original indication. But its new indication is actually a first relapse. So it's indicated for patients who have had one line of therapy in combination with bortezomib and dexamethasone. Everybody gets dex. It's kind of what we do.
What were the key patient education points that you felt you had to address early on?
So I think one of the challenges is when a patient keeps relapsing and then having to come back to them and tell them, you relapsed again, we have to change your treatments. That is a challenge in all honesty. That is a challenge. And it's to him and to his caretakers and his family, it becomes a shock and maybe some disappointment, hoping that one therapy that he was on would have lasted longer. But explaining to him that a new mechanism action can help combat some of the resistance or refractoriness of standard of care is kind of the golden light from the tunnel for themselves. But in reference to selinexor, it is an oral chemotherapy. So it is going to causes some type of GI toxicities or distress. And I think that's most of the things that we do discuss with patients is the GI toxicities. And then also making sure that they adhere. Because once a patient leaves your your building or out of your sight. You know, it's like sending kids to college. You think that you know what they're doing, but they're not. You don't really know. And that's kind of what happens outside in our world. Our patients leave our sight, and we hope that they take the oral treatments in, you know, weekly when they're supposed to take them. We provide calendars, we provide written information, how to do it. And we're always available via messaging through our electronic record systems. Unfortunately, the patient has my phone number. So yes, they do contact me quite often. So it's really maintaining that kind of continuity and support throughout their treatments, and knowing and explaining to them that they may have to come in more than once a week, even though bortezomib is given weekly. With the selinexor, you want to say to them, you may have to come in more than once a week because we want to make sure that you're tolerating the therapy well. There are other side effects, hematological side effects, that we may have to intervene to help support them through it. And why we say that in the world of myeloma is because continuous treatment has shown patients to have longer progression-free survival. And holding treatment sometimes, and especially patients who relapse very quickly or have high risk myeloma, you want to keep them on the therapy and give them the support they need to maintain them on it. By holding it may give the opportunity for the disease to come back.
Right. And so in your presentation, you highlighted a lot of adverse events that nurses may encounter or need to be prepared for when caring for a patient on selinexor. And there were a decent amount, but would you be able to highlight these and talk about ways to prophylax against some of these adverse events, how to identify it, and what appropriate management looks like?
Absolutely. So neutropenia are very important. We see that also with bortezomib. If it's greater than 1,000, most institutions, we may just watch and wait. But if it does drop below one, you want to make patients an option. So you may want to either A, give them some type of growth colony stimulating factor to help boost them and keep them on the drug. And then you may also want to consider decreasing selinexor's dosage. Sometimes it's at 100, sometimes it's at 80, and you may have to dose reduce it down to 60 to make sure that the patient is tolerating the drug. And one of the things in myeloma is it's not always the dosage that drives the treatment's response. It is the dosage to a degree, but sometimes just that combination or that synergistic effect with it, with a proteasome inhibitor. So dose reducing it, allowing patients better tolerability in combination might also be the key decision maker. The other side effect would be diarrhea, monitoring the patients and asking that, you know, making sure they're having good oral hydration because patients tend to become dehydrated. So you really want to make sure they have good oral fluid intake, but you want to be able to monitor diarrhea and really understand what diarrhea is. It once a day? Is it five times a day? Is it watery? Is it soft? You also want to rule out other causes, such as diarrhea. You want to make sure that it doesn't have an infectious causative, such as C. diff or any other type of bacteria. So you want to make sure that you are doing some types of cultures on their stool. If it's negative and it's really caused by the therapy, you could give them antidiarrheals to help support that. So loperamide. You can give 4 milligrams for the first dose and 2 milligrams thereafter as needed. It helps our patients go along, telling them to do sometimes a BRAT diet. So making sure they're not really having spicy foods, or sometimes, honestly, as we get older, some patients become lactose intolerant, but they love a lot of milk products. So I tell them not to really go into the milk products, have lactate items, a lot of breads, bananas, rice, things that can cause bulking to help their stools. But again, always really monitoring the severity. And we talk about keeping patients on longer, but really the severity of the adverse event, if it becomes a grade 3, if it's really patients are losing weight, they're dehydrating, we may have to hold the therapy at some point. I think fatigue, I always giggle with the word fatigue. I said, I'm fatigued, so I must be on selinexor. No, but in reality, you know, we're all tired. But fatigue can cause from a lot of things, depression, anemia, dehydration, finding the cause. So is their hemoglobin adequate for them? Is it greater than 8? You know, sometimes patients can't tolerate less than 8. So you may have to transfuse them. Looking at it, if there's any other metabolic causes for the fatigue, is it subtypes of thyroid? Is it adrenal? So again, really looking into why they're having the fatigue and then trying to motivate them. Some patients can go on methylphenidate. The Ritalin can also be very helpful. But one of the most interesting I always found was hyponatremia. So low sodium was another big side effect that we saw in our patient population when they started, even in the original trial, as a single agent and even seeing it in combination with bortezomib. But it wasn't as symptomatic as hyponatremia that we think about. So patients, hyponatremia is with patients that have a sodium level less than 130 nanomoles per liter. You're going to watch them and keep them. You can hold the drug itself. I tempt patients sometimes to eat salty snacks, which will help with their lack of eating and help with their wake. So eat saltines, or you may have to give them salt tablets. You might have to give them IV fluids with sodium in it to help maintain the level itself. One other side effect, and it's sometimes it can cause some cognitive changes. So some patients, because selinexor does cross over the blood-brain barrier, it does enhance sometimes the nausea, but it can also cause some types of confusion, but in the sense of word searching and their minds are in a fog. I always rely on my patients' caregivers and their support team because cognitively they know how to answer medical questions very well. How do you feel? Fine. Everything great? Yes. Have you been eating? Sure, no problem, right? So they know the questions we've asked them because we've never changed the question. It's the caregiver or the support team around them at home that says no, they forget more, or they're word searching, or they look confused. So it's us pulling the information also sometimes from outside sources, I'd have to say, than just the, because patients will tell us whatever we want to hear because they want to stay on the therapy. And it's really monitoring how to get them best. It's a balance, right? You want quality therapy, but quality of life and managing the side effects.
And that must be hard for the caregivers to see
It is a
that.
challenge.
I think compared to the diarrhea and the fatigue, they might be more equipped for those, but that must be challenging.
It is very challenging for them.
And so to go back to Mr. A,
Yeah.
how did he fare on treatment? Did he begin to show signs of an AE?
The only thing that re I have to be honest, I was impressed by him. The only thing that was, it was the nausea and the lack of eating. So once he started the olanzapine, and he takes it, actually, he takes it every night. He has actually gained like 2 pounds. So he's actually eating better with just the olanzapine, and he has
But he
just
had some
some
GI
nausea, some GI,
nausea.
and some thrombocytopenia, but which is very common. As I mentioned earlier, one of the side effects, even with bortezomib, is thrombocytopenia, but selinexor on its own also can cause thrombocytopenia. So again, you're going to monitor your patients weekly. Sometimes you may have to, if they have high tumor burden, you may have to bring them in more than once a week and give them platelet support. And understanding that you may have to be able to hold the therapy if it really is necessary, if it's dangerously low, or they're having bleeding. But one of the things that you can provide, because we do know that selinexor can interfere with the development of platelets, we can consider TPOs in support of patients. So giving them a medication to help boost platelet stimulation during their treatments also might be an option if it's not declined by insurance, but then also giving them transfusions alone. So if their platelets from the PI, if the platelets are less than 25,000, you can, definitely transfuse your patients and things like that. Weight loss, I will say it has GI toxicity. I will talk about one of the major side effects that patients have or adverse events that we saw in the original clinical trial, even in the second clinical trial with the proteasome inhibitor. We did see patients have some type of weight loss or anorexia. They just don't want to eat. So one of my educational points with patients is that you want to be able to weigh yourself every day at the same time and make sure that, and with the caregiver with them to make sure that they're maintaining their same weight. We always have a nutritionist jump in right away with our patients that start on selinexor. So try to find the best nutritional support, whether it's high calories and small packages, be able to give those to patients up front so they can maintain their weight. And if they start to lose weight, we may have to then a dose adjust. For weight loss, there are some medications out there or support therapies such as olanzapine, and olanzapine also can help with nausea. So we do recommend doing olanzapine on a nightly basis. Again, all part of your institutional guidelines and physician's comfort. But olanzapine, you could give them some type of cannabinoids if they can tolerate it, or again, or modify the patient's dosages along the way. Trying to get them to eat whatever they want to eat is fine by me. I tell them small meals all day, just pick and eat constantly all day. It's not all about Jenny Craig. This is not the weight loss program. This is try to, you know, be robust.
Right.
But nausea also is a big thing. And I would say all oral therapies do cause some type of nausea. But with selinexor, I will say it was one of the major side effects of patients. So you want to start them on a really good anti-nausea regimen up front. And what we have done at our institution, and it's actually also in the PI with selinexor, is you want to start a patient off on a 5-HT antagonist. I usually recommend every 8 hours, starting maybe the night before and for the next 3 days while they're on selinexor, to help hold them on that. You want to either give them some type of olanzapine. You can give that at night. And then, interesting enough, and a very good medication that we have found worked well with our patients was the NK1 receptor antagonist, relatlimab. It's an oral medication that's given every 2 weeks. So again, putting them on a strong 5-HT3 antagonist, making sure they're on it for at least 3 days, keeping them on the low dose olanzapine. Sometimes patients just do the olanzapine for about 3 days while they're on the anti-nausea. Some of my patients continue it nightly if they tolerate it very well. You can keep them on the olatinib every 2 weeks continuously. And then you can also offer them, either if they're very nauseous, you can give them some type of benzodiazepine such as lorazepam at night. But again, I always stress it's institutional guidelines. It's also the patient, what they can tolerate. If they're very sensitive to a lot of these drugs, is really the other part. You may have to bring them also in for fluids. With weight loss and nausea, is something that you want to bring them in for fluids.
So how did you help Mr. A navigate those GI toxicities?
By him constantly calling. So no, really talking through it and really examining why he was having it, how frequently, when did it occur? And it was more persistent for him. So it wasn't just around the drug itself. So it wasn't on the day one and 3 days later. It was kind of persistent for him. So by having him go on he was doing the anti-nausea, the 5-HT3 antagonist. He was on the Verubi. So those things were working to keep the nausea down, but it was his lack of appetite. So adding olanzapine at night, and he's on it every day, seems to work for him.
Wonderful.
I love it.
You're still caring for him?
Every day. His wife loves to annoy me. No, I love her dearly. I've known him now since the time of diagnosis. So I've had 3 good years with him. And I have to say, her and the daughter are fantastic. They're very on top of everything. If something happens, the wife calls me immediately. So, you know, they're really involved in keeping his care.
That's great. And so overall, we talked about a lot today. What are some key clinical pearls for nurses alongside nurse practitioners when caring for patients on selinexor?
I think the key role, there's 2 big key roles. I think one of the key roles is managing the adverse events, but preparing patients up front before starting any new therapy, especially selinexor, what these adverse events will be, whether it's nausea, lack of eating, you know, the thrombocytopenias. Understanding that there might be more frequent visits, but most myeloma patients understand they come in more than once. They're very accustomed to coming to centers more than once. And I think the other big platform, 2 big platforms, is really good antiemetic prophylactic treatment up front. So really starting them on that 5-HT3 antagonist, putting them on the NK1 antagonist, putting them on the olanzapine up front with starting of the therapy, even in cycle one, putting it on that and monitoring the patients. And as the patient proceeds through it, start to taper it back by cycle 3 or 4, pull back on some of that and see if they tolerate it. And if they do, then you can just use the antiemetic PRN and giving them those extra supports that they need, hydration, especially a dietitian, and really talking about diet, salty foods, and having them just eat all day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.